Hello and welcome to Poetry Nonstop. I'm Patrick Widdis and my guest today is a poet who has featured a couple of times on the NaPoWriMo podcast, and it's great to have him for a full episode. Peter Wallace is an award-winning poet from Norwich who is about to publish a collection about his twin brother. He has shared a couple of interesting forms with us in the past, and here he discusses how he has been inspired by the poet Matthew Welton and how repetition can be used as a technique in poetry and for generating ideas. Here he is with the poem from that forthcoming collection.
Daily, I tell myself there's nothing wrong with you that Cherry Active won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that two Cherry Active tablets won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that vitamin D3 won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that vitamin D3 1000 IU capsules won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that desmopressin won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that desmopressin nasal spray 6 ml at 10 micrograms per actuation on demand won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that thyroxin won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that thyroxin 100 mcg won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that testo patch won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that testo patch 2.4 mg times 2 varying the position daily according to the chart won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that bromocriptine won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that bromocriptine 2.5 mg won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that lansoprazole won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that lansoprazole 15 mg on an empty stomach and not within 5 hours of the thyroxin won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that hydrocortisone won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that hydrocortisone 10 mg first thing, 5 mg at lunch and 5 mg with tea but not after 6 and always with food won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that midodrine won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that midodrine 5 mg as needed, well spaced throughout the day, but no later than a 6 p.m. deadline, won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that allopurinol won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that allopurinol 300 mg won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that heumatrope growth hormone won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that 6 mg heumatrope growth hormone injected into your stomach nightly but varying the site won't put right. I tell myself, there's nothing wrong with you that meditation won't put right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you that 40 minutes of mindfulness-based stress reduction, sitting last thing at night and lying first thing in the morning, won't put right.
It's an interesting poem and very well read. Can you tell us where the idea came from?
Yes, the idea came from the fact that I've been reading lots of Matthew Welton. First of all, he did a pamphlet called Waffles, which I really enjoyed, and it had lots of repetition and variation in it. Then he did a book called The Book of Matthew, which similarly had quite a bit of repetition. But his third book has a 101-word title, so you know you're in for something unusual, and it includes a series of 13, a poem in 13 sections, which is all based around repetition. And it was reading one of his poems that I thought, how can I use that for something more personal? His poem uses lots of repetition, but it also uses alphabetical order, and so it didn't have a sort of personal slant on it, and I wasn't sure what the personal input to it was or what personal message I should have from it. So my idea was to use the heavy repetition, but to try and give it some emotional content.
Yeah, and we can well imagine the sort of situation that you were thinking of. What exactly was that in your case?
Well, at the time, I was writing lots of poems about growing up as an identical twin, and then as an adult, my twin brother has had brain surgery, and so there have been lots of consequences, but one of them is that we're no longer identical. So my idea was to write a poem that just listed his daily drug routine. You know, he's on this terrific whole regime that fills his life, taking these drugs. And the emotional side of it, really, I wanted my frustration and anxiety to be the emotional element in the poem, while his experience was the factual, I must take this, I must do this, I must do this. So I was trying to bring the two things together.
Yes, it comes through very effectively and without being addressed directly, but you kind of get that sense of hope and desperation when you have someone in your life who's suffering from something.
Yes, that's what I was aiming for, and I like the repetition because it adds a certain distance at the same time as adding a sort of frantic pace as well.
Yeah.
And I think the idea of being twins is quite important too, because as we grew up, obviously, if we were given a present, a shared present was fine and we were grateful, but if there were two presents, they were often a variation on a theme. So, you know, if one of us had a blue football, the other one would have a yellow football, mm-hmm. or one would have a red shirt and the other one would have an orange shirt. So the idea that things were repeated but changed in some way, you know, we find very satisfying. So there's that idea behind it too.
Yes, and I think writing in a repetitive way could end up being quite boring. So how do you make it effective?
Well, I go back to Matthew Welton. There was one section of his 13-section poem, which is called Dr. Zeus. Section 10 is very repetitive, and on the page you can see how repetitive it is just in the type. And perhaps reading in your head, you might read it repetitively. But I found that if I read it aloud, it was impossible to read it without putting some emotion or inflection into the writing. So I found that interesting, that although the repetition is very extreme, the reader brings to it some emotion or constructs some scenario behind the repetitive writing. So, I just find that very satisfying on the one hand and interesting on the other hand.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing that could be difficult with something like this is knowing when to finish it.
Well, again, the thing with the Matthew Welton is it goes on for two pages. It starts, there are lots of names involved. It starts at a certain point, the names are in alphabetical order, and it stops at a certain point, and there is no logic through it, and there's no development in the poem. So I find that interesting too, that I think often people, even if they use repetition in poems, might use it more sparingly and target it for some effect, perhaps to round off the poem by repeating something at the beginning. But with these poems, the repetition is the poem, and it's very direct and unapologetic and, yeah, just very strong. It starts at a certain place and stops at a certain place, and the reader must make something of it. I didn't actually do that with this poem called Daily, because I tried to make it a loop. It starts Well, it works through my brother's daily drug regime from the morning through to the evening. But in the last stanza, I point out that his mindfulness, which he does in the mornings, is all in the evenings, is also done in the morning. So that the poem is in fact a loop, and you could carry on and read it endlessly.
Yes, yes, and there's a nice shift there as well, moving from the drugs and medication to the mindfulness.
Well, in his treatment, the drugs are necessary, but a significant improvement in his health has come from mindfulness.
Yeah.
People laugh when I read the poem. People often laugh when I get to the end in a nervous sort of way because of the mindfulness. But actually, it is a significant element in his treatment.
Yes, yes, and we're learning a lot more about it these days. Have you done a lot of these poems with repetition?
Yes, I have. I like repetition, as I've said, because of the twin thing. And I haven't used it for such a long poem as this daily poem, but I do use it quite a bit and enjoy using it.
And so I think your challenge to listeners is to write a poem with repetition as well.
Yes, I just find it fun. I look at it as play, verbal play. You can't go wrong, I think, because the endlessness of it means that, you know, you can generate any amount of text and then you can edit it down to make a poem and keep the significant or the more interesting parts. But initially it's just play. I sat on the train once just outside Ely and there were seven bathtubs in a field side by side, and I spent the rest of the journey just saying to myself, seven bathtubs in the field like giant dentures, seven bathtubs in the field like piano keys, seven bathtubs in a field like galvanized ditches. And by the time I finished the journey, I'd got 108 similes. And so then I can edit those down and do something with them as a poem. So the thing is to be playful and let your mind move from one thing to another and generate lots of text without thinking too much about how it's going to start and where it's going to stop. Though I do think if you're doing this and you're aiming for a poem, it's good to have in mind some serious issue or phase of life. You know, obviously I had my brother's illness in mind when I was writing the daily poem. But, you know, if you think about teenage angst or planning a wedding or those stressful points in one's life, and just not to make it foreground, but to have it in the back of your mind while you're generating this text helps to bring some seriousness to what is essentially playful.
Yes, yes, and certainly in your poem, so much about your brother's situation comes through without being spoken directly.
Shall I say what I was going to ask people to have a go at as a writing exercise? It's repetitive, of course. I was going to suggest if people start with something like 4:30 in the morning, indeed. I'll give you 4:30 in the morning. You know, because people say that in all sorts of situations. You know, it doesn't matter if it's Mickey Mouse, I'll give you Mickey Mouse, or, you know, you only had two beers, I'll give you two beers, you know. And I think people could generate a poem by using that. 4:30 in the morning, indeed, I'll give you 4:30 in the morning. And of course, the indeed can play either way. It can either be the end of the first phrase or it can be the beginning of the second phrase. And if you go back to the Matthew Welton example, he would perhaps change proper nouns, maybe in alphabetical order. So any proper nouns are grounds for play and variation within the repetition. And sometimes adjectives too he will change, again, often on a structure that he has in his head. So you know, I think there's grounds to play and come up with some interesting material.
Yeah, that's a great starting point, and it's a sort of very low pressure exercise, just to get the pen moving and your mind working. And I suppose after doing that, you might get some idea which is more interesting or meaningful to you. Or
Yes, I think I said to have a sort of difficult situation in mind or something that's been stressful. And I think that's true. It's a way of bringing those things to the surface and being able to write about them, even if you found it difficult with a blank page to write about a bereavement, say. If you have bereavement in the back of your mind while you're doing this exercise, you will find that within the form there will be things that you can say that will reflect on the bereavement that you want people to be party to.
Yeah, well, I hope you all have a go at that and see where it takes you, and share the results. And I think you have another poem which again uses a bit of repetition.
Yes, this is a shorter poem. It's called Hospital Bed. You wear the bed like an exoskeleton. You wear the bed as compensation for the failure of your body's intricate contraption. You writhe in bed like a lobster in bent wood and netting. You wear the bed the way a bird wears a cage, or a fly wears a web. You wear the bed like a flat pack, half completed. You wear the bed like a butter dish or a design by Vivienne Westwood. You wear the bed the way a tongue wears a mouth, or a cyst wears your head.
That's amazing lines in there. Take it that's also about your brother.
Yes, that was my brother in hospital, and I spent hours beside the bed. I didn't write them at the time, but afterwards I've written one or two poems of similes, or similes usually, of the body in the bed.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, the person being confined to a bed when they're very unwell, which I think a lot of people can relate to. So these poems are part of your forthcoming collection.
Yes, I have a book coming out in the autumn. It's called Half Other. It's about being a twin. It's half other, being the other half of the pair of twins. It's about growing up as an identical twin, and then it's in two sections. The second section is as adults, my brother's illness and us becoming unidentical. It's coming out towards the end of the year from the Hippocrates Press.
Right. So how long has it taken to write?
It's taken about 12 years. My brother's illness was a long time ago, and I didn't write very much at the time because it was so stressful. But when I retired, I decided that this was the time. If I was going to write, I must get on and do it. So when I retired, I addressed that issue and thought, well, let's pull together the story. And one of the things that was not addressed in his illness, because obviously it was his illness and not my illness, was the effect on me, because we are very close, and I wanted, by talking about his illness, to also bring in my response to his illness, which is what I tried to do in that poem Daily.
Yes. And had you written about such personal situations before? Yeah.
No, I hadn't, not in the same way. I've written lots of poems, and I've had things published and won some prizes, and it was going alongside being at work. And people used to say to me, why don't you write about being a twin? That's the individual thing about you. And I couldn't do it. But when I had time to look back, I thought, well, I can write about that experience of illness. And it was through thinking, okay, let's address the illness, that I became able to write about being a twin.
And how did you first become interested in poetry?
I did a literature degree in Sheffield, and I graduated in 1976. And after the final exams, I remember sitting in my student room thinking, who am I to be criticising all this work? The only way really to understand it is to try and write something. So from then, I started writing as a way of feeling legitimate in having opinions about other people's work.
And how did that go at first?
I always found it satisfying. I wrote the usual amount of things that I would now find embarrassing and, you know, wouldn't go back to, but it's a learning process, and I still feel all the time a constant student. I always think, well, it's a learning process and I'm still learning.
Yeah. What have you learnt through this doing this collection?
Well, in writing the poems, I didn't set out for them to be therapeutic, but they have proved to be therapeutic. They've made difficult situations and difficult emotions handleable and contained, and to some extent, once they're written, set aside. So, you know, I found that very interesting. But of course, even what's in the book is only part of the story, so it could go on forever.
Yeah, that was sort of going to be my next question. Do you feel it's you've kind of finished writing about this situation now? Is it going something that you're going to keep coming back to?
I will come back to it because it's an ongoing situation. My brother survived the brain surgery and is still alive, but still has difficulties. So the situation isn't resolved. But I'm writing about other things now. Before lockdown, I ran a poetry workshop in a local care home for people with dementia. And that had to stop because of the pandemic. And so since then, I've been poet in residence on some local allotments. And so I'm writing nature poems at the moment.
Wow, that sounds lovely. Has your brother been able to read these poems?
Oh, yes. He reads the poems, and he's a very acute critic. He's registered blind because of the surgery, but he has a little residual vision, and so he can read with some difficulty, and he's quick to respond. And poems don't necessarily have to be true, but his response is that the poems I've written are true to the events and the emotions as they happened.
And so when is the collection coming out?
I haven't got a fixed date. I think October or November this year.
Right. Good luck with that. It's been great to hear a few of those poems, and look forward to reading the rest of them. Do you have something you'd like to read to finish?
Well, I'd like to read the Matthew Welton, but it's quite long. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
So this is Matthew Welton. It's from his book, We Needed Coffee But, is the short title, because the actual title has 101 words. And this is section 10. I don't know why you have to bring René Descartes into it. I don't know why you have to bring Richelieu into it. I don't know why you have to bring Rip Torn into it. I don't know why you have to bring Roald Amundsen into it. I don't know why you have to bring Robert E. Peary into it. I don't know why you have to bring Robert Maxwell into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring Robert Maxwell into it. I don't know why you have to bring Robert Stevenson into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring Robert Stevenson into it. I don't know why you have to bring Roger Moore into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring Roger Moore into it. I don't know why you have to bring Rupert Murdoch into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring Rupert Murdoch into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Aidan into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Aidan into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Alban into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Alban into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Anselm into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Anselm into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Benedict into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Benedict into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Boniface into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Boniface into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Bruno into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Bruno into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Cyr into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Cyr into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Cyril into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Cyril into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. David into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. David into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Dionysus into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Dionysus into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Dominic into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Dominic into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Dunstan into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Dunstan into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Elias into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Elias into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Francis into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Francis into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. George into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. George into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Gregory into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Gregory into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Helena into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Helena into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. James into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. James into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Jerome into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Jerome into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Joan into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Joan into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. John of the Cross into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. John of the Cross into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. John of Damascus into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. John of Damascus into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. John into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. John into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Kentigern into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Kentigern into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Lawrence into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Lawrence into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Mark into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Mark into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Michael into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Michael into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Neary into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Neary into it. I don't know why you have to bring St. Nicholas into it. I mean, I don't know why you have to bring St. Nicholas into it.
Great.
And I like that poem because it confounds some of the expectations, because it just starts and it just stops. It is so repetitive. There is a structure in the alphabetical names, as yet it suggests that there's some sort of disagreement going on in the background. And for me, it has the beauty of perhaps Islamic art, which is often based on repetition and a sort of stillness. And it has for me a sense of meditation about it, a mantra that's being repeated. So Although it's very repetitive, I see quite a lot in it.
Yes, and I think poetry in general is made to be read aloud, and I think that in particular needs to be heard out loud, and it's a great feat of endurance to read us those two pages.
Yes, well, it's a pleasure. Matthew Welton is somebody I go back to often, and I always find him both enjoyable and stimulating and making me want to write something of my own.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I've got a volume of his on my bookshelf, so I'll have a look at that again. Thanks for sharing those poems with us, and good luck with the book and the allotments and everything else.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, it's been a pleasure.
That was Peter Wallace with some excellent poems there, and an exercise which I think could generate poems you never imagined you could write. As always, please share them or let me know if they inspire poems which are published elsewhere. You can email poetrynonstop@gmail.com or send them via www.poetrynonstop.com, where you can find all the details of this and other episodes. I've played around with the idea a bit, and this poem is perhaps still a work in progress, but I think it reflects much of the fear and anxiety which so many of us have these days. So I'll leave you with my poem, but hope to bring you more episodes soon. Until then, take care and keep writing. You can't afford to be late. I mean, you just can't afford to be late. You can't afford to risk a speeding ticket. I mean, you just can't afford to risk a speeding ticket. You can't afford to call in sick. I mean, you just can't afford to call in sick. You can't afford to wear those shoes. I mean, you just can't afford to wear those shoes. You can't afford to stand around like that. I mean, you just can't afford to stand around like that. You can't afford to put the big plates where the saucers should go. I mean, you just can't afford to put the big plates where the saucers should go. You can't afford to put 10 olives in each bowl. I mean, you just can't afford to put 10 olives in each bowl. You can't afford to call the doctor. I mean, you just can't afford to call the doctor. You can't afford Pilates on a Wednesday morning. I mean, you just can't afford Pilates on a Wednesday morning. You can't afford to get on the wrong side of the customers. I mean, you just can't afford to get on the wrong side of the customers. You can't afford to piss off the cleaners. I mean, you just can't afford to piss off the cleaners. You can't afford to miss out on promotion. I mean, you just can't afford to miss out on promotion. You can't afford £50 in free bets when you wager 10. I mean, you just can't afford £50 in free bets when you wager 10. You can't afford to forget the safety switch. I mean, you just can't afford to forget the safety switch. You can't afford to lie awake at night. I mean, you just can't afford to lie awake at night. You can't afford starter and dessert. I mean, you just can't afford a starter and dessert. You can't afford to put your hands in your pockets. I mean, you just can't afford to put your hands in your pockets. You can't afford to volunteer to coach the Junior Football League. I mean, you just can't afford to volunteer to coach the Junior Football League. You can't afford to take Saturday evenings off. I mean, you just can't afford to take Saturday evenings off. You can't afford to join the union. I mean, you just can't afford to join the union. You can't afford to think about it. I mean, you just can't afford to think about it. You can't afford to knock off early. I mean, you just can't afford to knock off early. You can't afford 0% interest for 18 months. I mean, you just can't afford 0% interest for 18 months. You can't afford to leave that hole in your sock. I mean, you just can't afford to leave that hole in your sock. You can't afford to lie in the report. I mean, you just can't afford to lie in the report. You can't afford to argue. I mean, you just can't afford to argue. You can't afford another investigation. I mean, you just can't afford another investigation. You can't afford 20 quid for the Secret Santa. I mean, you just can't afford 20 quid for the Secret Santa. You can't afford to read for pleasure. I mean, you just can't afford to read for pleasure.